everybody. My name is Sandy Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
And Sandy's right, but I don't share very often. And but anyway, I've known him for a long time. And anyway, when I get asked, I try and respond in a positive way and come out and share. So let me see. My sobriety date is June 15th, 1990. So, God willing, I will. I'm enjoying my 19th year of sobriety, and that seems impossible. Even now, it seems just mind-boggling that this could be true. I had I started early and finished early with my drinking. I probably started before I went to school, around age 4 or 5. Everybody in my family of origin is alcoholic, and so there was lots that went on in our home that made alcohol very accessible. And my parents used to have a lot of parties, and I liked to help my mom, and they liked a really neat house. And so one of the things I would do is I would get up in the morning and clean up the drinks. And it wasn't very long before I decided I would taste these drinks. And I remember going back to bed, after cleaning up drinks and just being really quite drunk at, you know, maybe 5 or so years old. And really after that, you know, I sort of drank or tried to get alcohol at any kind of opportunity. Because there was so much turmoil and stuff in our home, I always felt very insecure and unloved. You never knew what was going to go on. And a lot of violence in my home, and you know, my parents would have these parties and the furniture would get broken and you'd see people you loved getting beat up, and you know, would find people, strangers, sleeping in the bathtub and in various places around the house. So it was a very unsettling environment. And I mean, for me, it was sort of like, you know, you just think that that's how everybody lives, but at the same time, you don't have I didn't have a real sense of feeling secure. You know, I didn't feel free to ask friends over because you kind of never knew what would happen. I certainly didn't ask friends to sleep over, you know, because you really never knew what would go on after dark. So that's kind of what it was like. You know, so I just I sort of drank it at any given opportunity that would present itself: family gatherings, weddings, whatever. But you know, once I was a teenager, things were much easier, and always hung out with older kids, so that made things even easier. So in high school, you know, I would often go to the bar at lunchtime, and you know, and then not go back to school in the afternoon. And I remember being insulted when, you know, there would be businessmen in the bar and they would think, you know, that me and my girlfriends were hookers. So it's like, okay, you know, I didn't make those connections about, you know, that being in a bar during the day, that would be a fairly logical assumption, you know. But anyway, so it goes. I drank through my teen years and got into a lot of trouble. You know, I got into trouble with the police. Although I never went to jail, but I certainly got pulled over an awful lot. I drove drunk often, and thank God I never hurt anybody, never was in an accident, anything like that. But the potential was certainly there, and I had trouble in all areas of my life. You know, I had been a smart kid, but didn't end up doing well in school. I just barely got out of high school, and same thing once I went to college. You know, my first year I was top of my class. By the time I finished the second year of my program, I just barely got out of there, and I just didn't have the wherewithal or the staying power to stick with anything, because would always try and, I was great at making new starts, but I was terrible on follow through and finishing things, and that was sort of a theme that went on through my life and impacted, you know, relationships, family. Family relationships were always very, very tough. You know, I wanted and craved friendships and boyfriends and those kind of things, but it never seemed to work out very well for me. And at the time, I didn't understand why. But after being sober, I sort of came to realize that, you know, emotionally I just kind of wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot of rhyme or reason to how I behaved or things like that. So I was a binge drinker, and once I started, I couldn't stop. And there was a fellow that I met in high school, and my boyfriend lived out of town, and so we would often party outdoors and through the summer, you know, out at the fire pit, things like that. And there was a guy that his family had a farm, and he often had a lot to do, and he would show up late. And I knew his name, and I would look forward to him coming, and I knew I spent quite a bit of time with this guy, and but he would never get there till after midnight, and by then I was always really loaded. And years later, I wasn't sober, but I had moved away, and he showed up in Alberta and came to see me, and I had no idea who this guy was, and I had drank with him for years. It was like a continuous blackout when it applied to this person, and my life was full of those kind of holes. And so I never did feel very sure of myself. So this guy, I sort of, you know, skated on ice for a little bit, and it's like, oh, okay, well, why don't we go for a drink? And so we just went drinking, and then everything was fine. Ah, yeah, not good. Not good. And anyway, I, you know, was always a pretty unhappy person, you know, pretty unstable. Say, home life was terrible. Friends were, you know, I had the odd friend that would sort of stick by me, but, you know, school was tough. Everything was difficult, and I was always angry and feeling like I got the short end of the stick and that things didn't work out for me and, you know, that it would never be any different and all the rest of it. And anyway, sometime in my early 20s, I met someone who drank like I did, and, you know, through my teen years, a lot of people started to push away from me, and they say, geez, you know, you really have a problem with alcohol. And I always thought that, you know, maybe they were exaggerating, you know, but I would be somebody who would drink my fill and then go make myself throw up so I could keep drinking, because I would literally just be so full that I couldn't drink anymore. But I wanted to continue drinking. And I drank because I felt better. I felt better. It gave me relief. I felt like I was okay, you know, and that I didn't worry. I didn't obsess about things. I didn't feel nervous. I, you know, no longer really cared what people thought, and for the most part, things just seemed to be okay. But I often didn't know, you know, where I had been. It was always a challenge waking up in the morning, like, where am I? Was the first question. I, after a while, would wake up with one eye because somehow that was easier, and it's like, okay, things will come into focus, and maybe slowly I'll remember where I am. And then it's like, okay, where am I? Am I okay? I'm all in one piece. This is good. And then the next thing is, well, where's my car? And, you know, most of the time it was outside of my house, but sometimes it wasn't. And then, you know, I really had to have a couple of coffees and usually a drink to start figuring out where, in fact, my car was. Anyway, my car has always been my prized possession, and it was part of my independence, and it was always the way that I could start my next geographic cure and move to the next town and start over. My friends all hated me because my last name started with O, my maiden name, and everybody has space in their O's in their directories. Not if you knew me. I moved every 6 weeks, every 2-3 months. I mean, I moved all the time. 5, 6, 7 times a year I moved, because I just couldn't stay in one place. As long as I had the next thing going on, I would, you know, just be reaching towards that. But I couldn't make today work. So along comes my early 20s, and already I'm not feeling well physically. I have problems when I eat. I'm sick a lot. I lose weight like crazy, you know, something like 20 pounds in a weekend. And it's like, what's the matter? My clothes don't fit, you know, this and that. And it was a precursor of things to come. And anyway, I met someone who drank like I did, and I had been through some tough times and some personal issues at that time, and I took a big risk because I didn't trust people. I took a big risk and I shared these things with this fellow. And I was just so stunned that, because I thought he would hit me, because that's the way it was in my world. You know, you did bad things, you got hit, especially when it was between men and women. And he didn't hit me, and it was like, oh, all right. So I figured I must have found my soulmate. So I had just met this guy, and within a few months we were married. And he drank like I did, and all of a sudden I didn't want to drink anymore. And I thought, well, this is pretty interesting. This is good, because I probably should give up drinking. And what really happened is I just sort of started to manage his drinking. I couldn't manage my own drinking, and I seemed to be able to stop when he was drinking. But anyway, that's the way it went. And I've learned since I got sober that it is a common pattern for some women that this will happen. And so I stayed dry for the next 7 years, and you know, he said he wanted family, so I had a baby, and that didn't seem to be working out too well, you know, and he said he wanted kids, but didn't help, and I was crazy and frustrated and sleep-deprived and all of that. And so to try and fix the situation, I did the next logical thing, which was to have another baby, and that didn't work either. So, you know, this was my life, you know. I just kept doing the same things, thinking that things would be different, whether it was with alcohol or anything, and nothing was working. And after 7 years of being dry, I'd had no relief. And I really got to experience the insanity side of alcoholism. I dreamed about killing my husband, and it was frightening. It was really, really frightening. And I think I was getting to the point where, you know, a medical doctor or a psychiatrist would have to say for sure, but it was scary enough that I think that maybe I had a psychotic break coming, because I was really afraid that I would do it. I seldom left the house. I looked after my kids, but I couldn't seem to do much more than that. I had trouble carrying on a conversation. I was paranoid. You name it. I couldn't remember anything. And it did nothing but get worse after that. And the last year of that, I just really had the sense that I was waiting for something. And I didn't know what it was that I was waiting for. But whatever it was, I just figured was the end. I figured that I would die. I just... I don't know if my body was going to give out. I was sick a lot in those days. I would get up in the middle of the night in horrible pain. But, you know, I was unable to do the logical thing, which would have been to call 911. And instead I didn't. I just waited for things to go away. And anyway, through the course of this, we had moved all over. My husband was always losing a job, and so we had to move to the next town, and the next town, and the next town, which, you know, suited me fine, because I was used to this, and this is what you did. And we ended up back in my hometown, which is Saskatchewan. I'm from Regina. And anyway, my dad was still living there, and it's the first time in many, many years that I'm back in contact with my father. My parents had divorced when I was a teenager, and I just let go of all the contact with him. And, you know, to be honest, I was quite terrified of him. You know, he was still drinking, and I just, there was just too many things going on, and I was a wreck. I couldn't cope with it. So I'm there, I have the kids, I'm back in contact with him, and he likes the kids, so he comes over and visits with them, but boy, he's looking bad. So I have an uncle that had been in the program. I guess technically he's still a member, and at that time I think he was sober around 40 years. And so I called him and I said, I don't know if there's anything I can do. I said, but I'm worried about my dad, and I think that he's going to die. You know, he's disappearing. He looked horrible, and lots of really crazy things were happening for him. And so my uncle said, yeah, there was, that we could get in touch with some people. And what ended up happening is we did something called an intervention. And in order to get ready for that, I had to go to meetings, which I thought was really strange, because really there wasn't anything the matter with me. You know, he was the guy with the problem. But anyway, in retrospect, you know, there's lots that I understand. And they said we could go to Al-Anon meetings or ACOA or whatever. We just had to go to meetings, and just they wanted us to try and be a little bit grounded or whatever for this. And what happened for me is I went to some meetings. Eventually, ended up at an open AA meeting. And in Saskatchewan, they do it different. When there's a newcomer, they're all discussion meetings. So people just do a very mini share, and they all talk on step one. So it's all about how they got there. And just in the course of that first evening, they did a step one meeting for me, and somebody told my story, and I thought, how does she know all this stuff? That's exactly like me. And I felt at home. And that was the first time, and I watched people cry during that meeting, and nobody shushed them. Nobody said, don't cry. It was okay to just be who you were and feel what you were feeling, and that was okay. And I'd never seen that before. And I was quite taken with that. I thought that was pretty cool. And I saw people laughing, and it wasn't malicious. It wasn't a mean joke, and you know, it wasn't at somebody's expense. It was joy. And again, it was something I'd never seen. So that was it for me. I stayed. And at that point, it was a total epiphany that I was an alcoholic. I had no idea, because I didn't drink like my dad. And I didn't drink like the other alcoholics that I knew. But all of a sudden, I knew that it wasn't how much or when or even why, it was just what it did for you, what it did for me. And alcohol has always been my relief. I've been poor at dealing with my emotions, been poor at recognizing them. And even today, you know, sometimes it takes me a few days, sometimes a few weeks to sort of sort through an issue and see how I'm feeling about things. And you know, whatever, that's the way it is. Often I still have, you know, when I'm struggling with stuff, I still have drinking dreams. And I thought that would stop. It hasn't. It's okay. The bad part about the drinking dreams is now in the dreams, I go to AA meetings and I lie about having been drinking. So that part I find funny, you know, and I'll wake up and it'll be in a panic. It's like, oh my God, I drank. Why did I drink? And it's like, oh. So I have to wait and sort things through, and it's like, oh, it's just a dream. Okay, I didn't really drink. Okay, this is good. But it just reinforces for me that this is who I am. This is who I am. And it's okay. It's okay. I may struggle with the idea of drinking or the thought of drinking or the taste of drinking or whatever for the rest of my days, and it doesn't matter. Because all I ever have, and this was drilled into me right from the beginning, is what I have is one day. And that is based on my relationship with a higher power. And so those are the things I worry about, you know. If I'm struggling with stuff, I go to extra meetings. I'm not a big go-to-meetings kind of person. I got sober. Let's see what happened. So we did the intervention for my dad. I had done a bunch of soul searching and all the rest of it, and it became apparent through the process of doing this that I was growing and that nothing was happening with my husband, and that he wasn't going to participate in this new path that I was taking a look at. There was some bad things. He got really abusive with one of my children, and I thought, this is it. Like, I can't stay here. I couldn't really see any reason to do things for myself, because I didn't have a good picture of myself. I could look in the mirror and I didn't see anybody. And it took a few years of being sober till I could really see myself in the mirror. But I knew I had a responsibility to these children, and I took that seriously. So my dad went off to treatment, and a week after that, I left my husband, and I guess that was my first big leap of faith. I had no money, I had no place to go, I had two children in diapers, and I didn't have a job. So within a couple of days, I found us a place to live, and I didn't have money to make a down payment on the apartment or anything else, but I talked to the guy and he let me sign the lease and I moved in. And it really was a case of that leap of faith that I had to do this because there was nothing else. There was nothing else. I couldn't stay where I was, and I absolutely had to move forward in my life. And none of that would have happened if I hadn't been coming to meetings and hadn't been starting to take a look at my life. And, you know, those things have just continued. Everything I've learned here and learned in meetings, it's just part of me. I don't know. If I have any big message, except that, you know, it's just go to meetings. What you need is here, and I've never gotten into trouble going to a meeting. You know, I've gone to meetings in pretty bad shape sometimes, and I think, oh shit, you know, I don't want to go to these stupid meetings. But it's like, well. Left to my own devices, I don't make good decisions. Sometimes I still don't make good decisions. So it's like, okay, so, you know, I have to give my life over to a higher power. And sometimes I hear that higher power best when I go to meetings and I hear it through other people. So, you know, it's going to a meeting has never, ever made anything worse. And most often it makes things better. One of the other things that I was always told early on, that if all else fails, is work with another. So I try and do service. I have a few sponsees that I've had for years. Do what I can for newcomers. I've always had a home group. Always, always, always had a home group. Didn't want to have a home group. So, you know, I've learned to do the next right thing. The thing that's right to do, and it's true, you know, that if I waited till I wanted to do stuff, forget it. Left to my own devices, forget it. You know, I am not the best person to run my life. It's clear. It's very, very clear. I have proved that to myself over and over and over and over. You know, so anyway. Everything I've learned here has been useful in the rest of my life. You know, dealing with death, dealing with suicide in the family, helping me quit smoking, dealing with problems on the job, you name it. You know, there's a lot of wisdom in the people that come here, in the literature, all the rest of it. And it's surprising how different my life is just by doing a few simple things, by joining a home group, by, you know, reaching out to others, by doing the phones once a month, by just joining in. I wasn't ever anybody who would really join in, and it was because I was afraid. I didn't think I had anything to offer. Sometimes I still feel like that, and it's just like, oh well, do it anyway. Take a deep breath, step in there, do it, and the feeling comes afterwards. And usually it's just me feeling sorry for myself, you know. It's that twisted freaking mind that I have, you know. I was in a therapy program for the first 2 years I was sober, and it was based on AA, and we had to go to a certain number of meetings, and it was sort of like being in treatment for 2 years, and it was very confrontational, and, you know, sometimes things would happen in that, and I would twist all week, you know. It's like, oh my God, they want me to phone other people. It's like, you know, and I think about that now, and I mean, I didn't sleep for a week because I was so mad that they wanted me to contact other people. It's like, well, what the hell do I have to talk to other people for? I don't want to talk to other people. And, you know, it just comes down to that, you know, I had to start reaching out. I had to get outside of myself. And, you know, it's, by and large, it's worked, you know. I don't know. Sometimes I feel bad. Speakers get up and they talk and they're sober and it's like, oh, they have this really great life, you know, big house and this and that. And, you know, it's sort of like they got sober and they have riches and all the rest of it. And it's like, well, that didn't exactly happen, you know, but I have a normal life, you know. And I think I gave my life, my kids a life where they didn't find people waking up in the bathtub. They knew where I was. They knew the people that came into my home. They felt secure, they felt happy, and just a really solid life, as solid as I could give them, you know. Not perfect by any means, because, you know, I struggled royally all along the way. I had a lot of work to do, and still probably have a lot of work to do, and it's like, well, that's okay, you know, I'll take things as they come, and I don't have to have any big answers. I don't have to figure it all out today. I just have to do the next thing that's in front of me. So anyway, boy, and just kind of, it's good to talk. Anyway, I think that probably covers it. I belong to Saturday Night Follies. I moved to Montreal when I was 5 years sober, and really felt like, you know, five good solid years. I really felt like I had the world by the tail. Just got remarried. I'd had a bout with cancer that year, and sort of skated through that one. You know, came out here, and new marriage, 3,000 miles from everything and everybody that you know. And in a few short months, my life just fell right apart. So my new husband and I were in marriage counseling 2 or 3 months after we got married. And the marriage counselor, after about a month, said, "You guys should just give it up." And so you know, we wouldn't talk to each other in counseling, but you know, we looked at each other when we walked out of there and said, "Well, what the fuck does that guy know?" And a couple of stubborn alcoholics, you know, it's like not going to listen to anybody for anything. And it's like, you know, we're still together, you know, 14 years later, and we've worked it out. We've worked it out, and I've been extremely lucky. He's a really nice man, and he's not somebody that I ever would have considered giving the time of day to if I'd been drinking. Not my style at all. And you know, and he's a great partner. He's a great partner. I have you know, more freedom inside the relationship than I do on my own, and he's a great support to me. And you know, I've been through another bout of cancer in sobriety, and you know, it's a type of cancer you don't normally survive. And you know, I just said, like, I'm gonna be okay. Like, I'm not done with this life yet, you know, and came through it fine, and have a pretty decent quality of life now. You know, I have to be a lot more careful and manage my energy more than I've had to previously, but. You know, everything I do, I use the fundamental principles of AA, you know, about how I treat myself, how I treat other people, how do I feel about the situation, and it's great. I have no guilt anymore. It's just such a freedom to all of this, and feel that I finally dealt with all the stuff from the past, and or as much as I can for the moment, you know. Every once in a while something sort of pops back up, but the majority of the stuff is dealt with, and there's such a great freedom to it. So it's worth it. I recommend it. So hang in there. Thanks.